You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm a staff writer, IndyCornrows.com. And joining me on the other line, it's playoff time, is Mr. Tony East. Tony, what do I want to ask you how many games are they going to play in the playoffs? Is that too depressing to start the show?
I think it's less than eight.
Oh, okay. That's very depressing to start. I was going to say.
That's the way I will phrase it.
All right, let's just get into depressing.
I think it's more than five, but I think it's less than eight.
We'll turn to positive immediately, but after this question, over under 5.5 games.
Over, yeah, I'll go over.
Okay, how much would you bet on the over?
Oh, that's a good question. $50.
Okay, so you're willing to lose $50 per se. Okay. All right, that's fair. I think I bet under, to be honest, but that's just me.
Yeah, a lot of people are. Last year, I would have, and I was completely wrong.
Oh yeah, you were just an idiot last year.
Dead wrong last year. The talent gap is huge. Kyrie, Horford, Tatum, and Hayward are all pretty close to the best player on the Pacers right now. If you made a roster consisting of players on both of these teams, however. The next four guys are probably all Pacers, maybe five. So I would like to hope that you can win with depth, and I don't think that's impossible in the first round to win a few games with depth, especially because Sabonis is very good against the Celtics this year. So if they can find a way to not have Bojan go 1-for-8, I think they can win multiple games.
So I think the best place to start this is to look at the last two times they played the Celtics, because the other games are kind of irrelevant because they're not the same rosters.
Big played,
and they were so recently that like you kind of get a snapshot of who is hot right now for the Celtics and who not. And you know,
hot, and this is the biggest story to me. I hate to cut you off like this.
No, you're fine.
Gordon Hayward being Utah Hayward again is so huge for them, because him just being like a guy, like a Bojan level scorer, was like not a big deal, but now he's doing like stuff, really good stuff for them, and it's like a lot of ISO stuff, but that's how good he is. He can be get, what did I just click on? I meant to go to his game log, and Basketball Reference had a count. He for the better part of a month now, he's been very good. So since the All-Star break, Gordon Hayward is shooting 55% from the field. And only scoring 12 points per game, but that's on 8 shots. And he's doing it pretty efficiently. He's actually been a very good player for them. The Gordon Hayward that they thought they signed when they gave him a max after Utah. And I think that changes the optics of the series a lot, because then the Celtics go from a strong starting lineup with an okay bench to a very good team.
Yeah. And it kind of makes, I mean, he also vaults himself into a top five player in series. Like, you know, you're saying how they have the top four players, whatever. He makes them have the top five players all of a sudden, something like that.
Yeah, I agree.
Right. I mean, I guess I'm going back kind of to who are, so if you rank the top 5 to 6 players, whatever, what do you get? And it's like, so I would say
Kyrie,
Horford, Tatum, right?
The top three. Two. Yeah, probably.
Right.
And four.
Hayward, but you could make a case that Bojan and Thad are better right now if you take on Hayward's whole season.
Good.
No, we take out Hayward's whole season.
Yeah, that's fair.
Right. So I mean, but if not, then they've got the top four players, and then I mean, where does Smart fall in this?
Smart's right up. So like Bojan, Thad, and then Hayward, if you want to go that route.
Right.
Sabonis. And then Turner. The next tier of guys is Sabonis, Turner, Smart. That's probably the whole tier, actually. Tier is right there.
Right. So I mean. Because the thing about the Pacers last year against the Cavs was it was like they had LeBron, Love is somewhere in there depending on how healthy he was, and then the entire Pacers team was better than everybody else.
Yep.
I mean, that's how you knew that they had a shot at winning. You know, the Cavs had the top player, the Pacers had 4 of the next 5, per se, or 5 of the next 6 of their starters. But this, it's a little more, Celtics are a little better constructed, but then at the same time, this team also is only going to win 50 games probably this year, max Celtics, and so there's something wrong with this team in general. Well, if they're not a 60-win team, it's still a little bit confusing.
Yeah, I think we overhyped them a bit, including myself. I thought they were going to be very good.
I mean, they should have been competing for the top 2 seed.
I thought they were going
They never really were at any point, right?
Weren't Vegas they? Still has them projected as like a very high favorite.
Right. They've been so good in the playoffs in the past that you think they can just turn it on kind of thing. Like they've had back-to-back years of Eastern Conference Finals and they're a better team than they were.
Yeah, that's another factor to me to jut in there. Jason Tatum, fantastic player in the playoffs last year. That's a lot of the reason his trade value is as high as it is. He's young. You know, I fully believe he will be good again, given that he was good last year, but there is a small chance that he is worse.
Yeah, and so the question is, once you get outside...
Same with Terry Rozier, sorry.
So you got their top five, you had Hayward, Brown, then you get kind of this drop-off, right? This
big 8-9. Time. Baines is okay. Baines can do stuff.
But the thing with the Pacers, they're not that deep either. After about 7, you'll get the same kind of issues.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you want to get cute, you can be like, okay, like, McDermott can really help the series if he makes his shots, but, like, I don't think McDermott's 10 minutes a game and 2 threes are going to be like so important, you know?
No, I mean, I think the Pacers are probably going to rely a ton on Thad to play 37 minutes per game, and same with Bojan. If I had to guess.
Thad is going to have to guard the living hell out of Jason Tatum.
Yeah, I mean, I think
I will say to have some small matchup bright sides here. Wes Matthews can guard Kyrie, okay. I mean, and no one can guard Kyrie, but he's fine for that. Thad can be on Tatum, and I'm happy with that. I can have Turner on Horford and be happy with that. And I can hide Darren Collison and Bojan on, you know, Smart or Brown or Morris or whoever's out there and not be mad. It's when Hayward's in, I get scared because then they don't have a guy for him. But like matchup for matchup in the starting five, I don't think there's one like offense to defense thing that I go, oh no, like that's a killer one.
So how many games do you give it before Hayward is in the starting lineup? He's playing both recently, right?
That would change things. But then the bench is so vulnerable for them.
Not because they can try to stagger Kyrie, Hayward, and Tatum minutes.
That's how they do it now.
Well, no, but they bring Hayward off the bench, and that helps them stagger it.
Yeah, they should do that. They should continue that.
I don't know. But also, you're going to have to be
like, if they roll out like Rozier, Brown, Smart, and Baines, I'm like,
oh, no, but if you watch
the be that group.
I guess they end up in their close game, they end up playing Kyrie a ton of minutes. But like you look at it, they're not playing they're staggering, but they're not playing these guys 37 minutes. They're playing them 30 to 32.
That's they are pretty deep. They have 8 guys playing over 20 minutes.
When you get to like you can play Kyrie 38 minutes in the playoffs, you can stagger it a little better because you have more minutes to play with, kind of thing. True. But I also don't know in the round one you want to be playing. If you're thinking about winning the East, you don't want to burn all your energy in the first round of the series playing the Pacers. But then again, you got to take each series as
a win.
Win. No, I mean, that was probably Nick Mills' problem last year, right? Is he didn't want to play Vic all 24 minutes in the second half, which I don't think he thought about the next series, but it's like he thought about, you know, getting Vic rest a little bit when it's like, you got to win this game and worry about it later, almost in a sense.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I think the Pacers do well is they do take this Nets game that just happened. We're recording this right now. It's not a good indication, but like, they didn't take that game very seriously. They usually take games very seriously, though, and that does cater well to them.
Yeah, and I would say, I think you said this before in my previous podcast we recorded, that the way that you beat the Celtics start playing, it's my shot, like trading off shots
between guys
instead of trying to play team ball, which could easily happen.
And only Kyrie has the acumen to do that. You know, we've seen that against the Pacers before. If he's the guy that they decide his turn, then yeah, they'll probably win. But if they do alternate it between dudes a lot, I think that the Pacers would be happy with that.
Yeah. And so as I'm trying to get back to is what is the Pacers matchup advantage in this series?
Sabonis versus anybody.
Does Bogdan have a chance at being an advantage over something?
No, they shut him down.
Right?
They just shut him down. Sabonis is the big one to me. He's going to be a good way to generate offense. And then two subtle, tiny little ones, if I can.
Yeah.
One, when Thad Young is in the game, the Celtics do not care if he shoots threes at all. They just don't. They don't guard him out there at all. He's about a league average guy this year. If Thad can hit his three and make them stretch out a bit, I think he can be an offensive mismatch win. Because unless they start Horford Baines, which they might, in which case he will have the spacing, and they, you know, they can't chase guys out there. He can be more threatening as an inside-outside kind of guy that makes them respect the shot. The other one to me is Tyreke Evans. I can't believe I'm saying this.
I can believe you're saying it. Honestly,
why? Because it's me.
But every time you say Tyreke's name, then you say I can't believe I'm saying this, and then you say it. But you do every podcast.
Important. I don't think he will be because he's disappointed as this whole season, but there is just like he's a guy that could put pressure on the rim. They don't have that. If they can break down a defense, they can score. Like if he can get any kind of rhythm going, I think he can be a big time player. I don't think it's going to happen, but I think he has a very large variance on the impact he can have on the series.
Yeah. I worry with Tyreek that
it's
going to totally, go bad so totally quickly, and then you're going to be just liability of a player.
I understand that. I totally get it. It's scary. And they just said, like, we're going to play guys who are effective in the playoffs. Like, there's a not zero chance that they're like, you know what, Tyreek, get out. Holiday, try. Go play.
Right? I mean, that's what I'm thinking. I was going to say, how long do you think before Holiday gets a shot if Tyreek is playing bad? A game?
Yeah, two games probably.
Yeah.
I don't know. It depends what the series is at too.
So they have the advantage of if they're not at home the first two. If they lose the first two games, they can like at least talk to them.
If you're down 1-2 in a close game and you throw Holiday in there and he sucks, like oof, they would never do that.
No, but I mean if they're down 2-0, I think they have the ability, but they can make a change and stuff like they're in the series because they haven't lost a home game yet.
Yes.
That's the one advantage you have where if you're home first and you split your first home games, then you have a lot of pressure to win it on the road. Versus you don't get that pressure on the road until game five if you're the road team.
Yes.
Well, I mean, obviously, if you don't win at home at all, then you're screwed. But if you
then you lose,
you have a pressure. Your whole goal in most series where you're the underdog is to split your first four games and then steal game five and six. That's the formula of winning a series usually.
But yeah, those two guys, I'm gonna write about those two in particular. Mean a bit to me. And then on the defensive end, how much can Wes Matthews disrupt Kyrie? I don't think the answer is a lot, but you know what? If he can do a lot, that's huge.
All right. Let's do this. Let's take a quick break. And then on the other break, I've got a player that I think is probably the most important player in the series, but is constantly not living up to expectations.
Okay.
So, hey, Tony, have you heard about this Wise indoor camera?
I have, Adam. It sounds really awesome and not very expensive, which is fantastic.
So here's the thing. It's like $20. And you can use it for what? Basically watch anything in your house anytime and pretty good HD, night quality, all that kind of way, right?
It seems like you can use it for both like a doggy cam and also to like film yourself jumping on a trampoline or like doing fun activity, like ziplining or a fun activity like that.
Yeah, and also seems like a good thing that you can use to kind of watch parts of your house. If you have a big house or you have blind spots in your home or like maybe you want to cook dinner while your kids are in the playroom, so you want to make sure, you know, they're, you know, a young kid, you want to be able to watch them kind of thing. Like it's like the perfect kind of thing to just be able to see things around your house that maybe you feel like you can't see.
And because you can use it for everything, they want to make sure you can keep all this stuff because you might be filming all the time. They have this rolling cloud storage stuff for 14 days. Like everything you film will be uploaded to the cloud for free. You can download it anytime. Make sure you keep it. It's great. You can use it for some examples. They give you bird watching your food simmer on the stove while you run errands. Watching over your water softener to know when you need more salt. Watching your plants grow through a time lapse. Many fun things you can do with these awesome, only $20 Wise cameras.
Yeah, so I told this story last time, but so my roommate has a small little pet snake, and it escaped the cage, and we found it about 4 days later.
Wow.
But it would have been great. Actually, I don't know if we found it. I guess I don't know if I told people we found it between the last time I read the ad, but it would have been really nice to have one of these cameras to watch the snake to figure out where it went because, you know, it just apparently left the cage the top opened a tiny bit and it slipped right out. And it would be nice to know, it could have followed the path where it went. And then it then went on the fridge and stuff like that. So this camera would be very useful for that kind of stuff. I don't know if you got a snake, but that's something it could be useful.
Hey, last big thing, works with Alexa too.
Oh, that's true. And so, right, if you go to what our website, you go to
wise.com/lockedonpacers.
Yeah, you can get it for $20. All right, Tony, did you like my pre-break tease?
I think I know who it is, but I don't want to say it.
So I think the advantage the Pacers have in this series that could really exploit is you've got an aging Al Horford who has looked at times this season like he's aging. He is still a very good player, but it looked at times like, okay, he's not quite what he was a year or 2 years ago or even in last year's playoffs. And you've got on the Pacers side a center who they just gave a lot of money to, who has the opportunity to really kind of show off kind of the pieces he's put together this year where, you know, there's been games here and games here that where he's showed different parts of his game to put together a nice little run and kind of be the leader in the playoffs, and that's Turner.
Yes, I knew you were going to say Miles. Okay. Yeah, he does have a chance to have a good series. His defense is going to have to be pristine to me because the Celtics have a lot of guys who can get to the rim off the dribble, which means, I mean, Horford's a floor spacer, But I almost think you have to live with it at times because of how many guys they have that can attack the rim. Turner has a very tall task coming his way on defense. And on offense, he has shown some off the dribble stuff. He's going to have to be impactful because last year that was the problem, is he couldn't do enough on offense.
Yeah. Am I wrong to say Turner has the ability, if he plays at his peak defensive and let's say his maybe not peak offensive, but somewhere in the 80-90% of what his best offense is, to be the second best player on the court?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. What do you think is more important about Turner? I have a good one here. His offense or his defense?
His defense. I mean, I think if he can force Kyrie to kick the ball at the Tatum in the corner and make guys like Tatum, Horford, Baines, and Smart hit threes. You know, I think as much as Smart does kill the Pacers time of threes, you let Smart, if he takes 8 threes a game, you let him take them and just hope he gets 2 of them. I mean, you live with maybe Tatum doing the same thing. I mean, I don't know the 3-pointers, but I'm pretty sure. So Tatum is what? He's got a 3% up to about 37. But you've got
Here's what I'll tell you, Adam.
Yeah.
Ooh, that came out of my mouth like horribly. Kyrie at the rim, 63.2% this year from 0 to 3 feet. So they're scorchingly good.
That's Oladipo level good.
That's 1.2 points per shot, which requires to match that. That requires you to be a 40% or better 3-point shooter. Guess how many guys on the Celtics are 40% 3-point shooters this year?
Only one, Daniel
Tice.
Yeah.
So I think you have to be collapsing at the rim every Kyrie drive. Make someone shoot a three. I don't care if it's statistically a better shot. I want the threes to be flying for them because that is cutting off their best option.
Well, and the thought is if you can force Kyrie to kick the ball out, you can get Thad or you can get Bojan, who have got somewhat longer arms flying at the three-point shooters, and force them at least semi-contested three-point shots.
There's a reason that opponents are shooting like league average from deep. Boston does have a very high like team three-point percentage this year. I think they're 7th because they have a lot of very good average guys who take a lot. But the Pacers' three-point defense is better than a lot of teams. So
right now they rank 6th at 30. No, it's opponents. Sorry, you're right. They rank 7th at 36.5%. So yeah, I mean. Yeah.
And Kyrie's the only guy I'll say that about. Everyone else, you kind of, you send Turner at him and it's like, if he makes it, he makes it. But when Kyrie's driving, just let him pass. Make him pass. I don't care who shoots a three. Anyone else.
Yeah, I mean, I think Turner, too, has the ability, the way Oladipo made last year's series defined by how he played, in a sense. I mean, even though LeBron was awesome, I feel like last year's series against the Cavs was like, can Oladipo get enough to beat LeBron? That's what it felt like to me. Can he just get enough out of everybody else? Can he put just enough to get past LeBron? And he could.
Bojan got him a game.
Yeah. And so the question is can Miles Turner make this kind of his series on the Pacers side?
Yeah.
Because if he does, they really might have a shot at winning it, to be honest. But
That'd be a hell of a story.
I mean, and it would be for a guy who has been who's had such high expectations for him and has really not been able to reach those exceedingly high and almost stupid expectations. I think we agree in that. But has been a really good NBA player and has reached a level that is still really, really good. I mean, he's probably a top 40, 50 player. But if he could have a defining playoff series, that would mark his career and probably would be kind of considered the turning point in his career. In a sense.
There's going to be a lot to talk about with him either way. I mean, if he's just okay and we don't feel like he was bad, maybe not. But like, I think he's either going to be good and we're going to be like, great, we can have this guy long term help us in the playoffs, or he's not going to be good and we're going to have to have a serious conversation about him.
Well, no, because the minute the playoffs end, there's going to be a serious conversation about Sabonis.
Him and Sabonis, yep.
That's the first conversation you have.
And another part of that conversation, I'm glad we got to this, is thank God that they're playing Boston, because the Baines-Horford duo is the perfect time to have Sabonis Turner out there.
The problem is they can't start that lineup because they can't play Thad because Thad is their best player.
Thad has to play almost 40 minutes a game.
Yeah, so could you see a lineup where they go Thad, Sabonis, and Turner?
Oh, man. We'll clamor for it forever, but no, they're not going to throw out a brand new lineup in the playoffs, right?
But, that's the kind of move that coaches that, like, have this lots of latitude.
Stone.
Maybe, well, and have lots of balls, per se, do it. And if it works, they're, like, heroes forever.
I do remember the first title run the Warriors had, like, every time when it was the death lineup, they had Draymond at center and Harrison Barnes at the four. Every time it would check in, someone covering the Warriors be like, death lineup in 321 to go in the first. Like it was a huge deal. It's not a big deal anymore because we all know how good it is, and they have Kevin Durant now. But it was like a huge innovative deal, and everyone's like, oh, the death lineup,
Yeah,
and then everybody had their own death lineup and all that.
The death lineup was like the reason they said you hired Kerr over Jackson, essentially.
Yeah.
You decided that lineup, which
you throw in Iggy and play a 6'8 guy at center, and all of a sudden nobody can beat you.
Well, so really think about it. If this is the matchup, if you do that lineup, is you've got then you have So Baines, Horford, Turner, Sabonis, that matchup's fine. Then you've got Young on Tatum, who's probably going to spend most time guarding Tatum anyways, correct? If you had, like, yeah, in this series?
Yes. Young.
So that's not a bad matchup. Then you've got Bojan on Smart, which Smart's not a good offensive player.
You got to have a dribbling guard. No Corey here.
But then you got Collison on Kyrie, and that's where you have the issue. But you're hoping you can clog up the lane so much with all these guys that, like, yep, forcing Kyrie to take a lot of jumpers, which Kyrie, of course, can hit threes and all kinds of crazy shots. But I don't think it's actually the craziest idea.
What if
it's
your five Kyrie best players? The one.
Ooh, that's interesting.
You don't like it?
Well, the thing is, I think you want your five best players.
Okay,
and,
fair enough.
And I think those are your fair five enough best players. I think Matthews is not better than Sabonis, and that's what the issue
Matthews
is.
Matthews is a great fit, but he's not one of the five best players.
No, you want your five. Right. You know, and it's why before this lineup really works well if you hold Oladipo the point guard. I mean, then you've got this awesome lineup. I mean, that's where – and that's – I mean, I think
that's going to be our biggest talking point this summer, isn't it, Vic at the one?
Well, no, I don't think they're going to do it. They won't. Honest. I think the idea is if you got a guy like Jrue Holiday or Conley, you can kind of – you both guys could play one and two constantly switching off, essentially.
Right.
Where he doesn't play one and three all the time, but you can let him play the ball sometimes and play Conley off him or Holiday off him. But that's a whole other conversation we'll talk about after the season ends. What I wanted to say, though, is you think about it, I think the biggest thing hanging over the series is the fact that Oladipo not being there is something we should probably talk – we should have to talk about it. Like, it's like – I mean, if you had Oladipo in the series, are the Pacers favorite to win the series?
Maybe. They beat him with Vic once.
Right, if they have Vic and we assume that they are
that time they got just waxed in Boston.
He did, but it was 3 and 4 nights or something like that.
Third and 4 nights on the road.
Yeah, and it was just when he had an injury recently. I think it was a very weird game.
Was that right after? Yeah, that's right. They had Bucks, Raptors, Celtics, like 1, 2, 3. That's right.
Yeah, but if they have Oladipo for even part, let's say they are the 4 seed. If they're the 4 or 5 Oladipo, are they the favorites?
Maybe they'd be real close.
I mean, how far, if at all, could this team have gone in the East, per se?
Pretty far. 57-win pace is not a joke.
Right. And I think that's the biggest thing that hangs over this whole series is that, like, they are not that far away from being competitive in the East because they easily could have been Eastern Conference final contenders if they had Oladipo. And they add another guy plus a healthy Oladipo, they're all of a sudden vaulted in that category of couldn't they win the East next year.
I agree.
And that's where even if they lose this series in 5 games, you have that to kind of think about. We're like, okay, this team is still probably one guy away from being.
There's going to be outcry about the team not being good enough when they lose. If they lose, excuse me.
when they lose,
it probably. But their best player is not playing.
Yeah.
It's not fair. It's just like the storylines surrounding them kind of aren't fair, no matter what happens.
Yeah, no. So I got a text from one of my friends who's a Celtics fan. He's like, you want to bet on the series? And I'm like, no, you know, I would, but I want to be realistic. Like, if I had Oladipo there, I would be confident. I mean, I would be like, okay, yeah, I think they could win it. 50-50 if Oladipo's there because these are two really good teams. But without Oladipo, it's sad. I don't know.
Yeah, and the flip side is like, if Vic's healthy and Kyrie's out, people probably like, oh, Pacers in 5, Pacers in 6, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's just crazy to think about that they probably, the Pacers realistically are one piece away from, assuming Oladipo's healthy next year, from being able to win the East, per se.
Yep.
I mean, that's it. Considering that really any of the top 4 seeds, I think this year can win the East. I mean, I think it could really play out anyway, just because I think it's Giannis' first year as a dominant player, and you don't know how he's going to do in the big pressure moments. You've got, you know, a Raptors team that should theoretically be the best team probably if 1 through 10, but who knows with Kawhi, and that Kawhi might be there next year, and same with the Sixers about next year, and so. It's just kind of interesting where they sit at right now. And
do that, you like, want, oh, go ahead.
Sorry, no, go ahead.
I was going to say, do you want to talk about lineups or the number of guys in the rotation?
Yeah, you want to do a break again real quick and then talk about lineups?
That's a great idea. Yes, I think we should do that. I will lead off here.
Go ahead.
Yeah, because I want to ask a hard hitter. Do you think that there's a chance they go to an 8-man rotation instead of 9?
So the 8 would be the usual
almost
7.
Starting 5, Sabonis.
Kojo.
And then you pick 2 of 3 between Kojo, Evans, McDermott.
So I worry McDermott's going to be pushed off the court. Well, I don't know.
Hayward. The thing with McDermott is I think he's the most – like he has a – there's a chance he doesn't play. But then Bojan and Thad are playing the whole game.
Yeah, but, I mean, that I think they're going to play 40 minutes a game. I mean
– I agree. That's true. I mean, but if I thought Thad could play the 3 – then you could, you know, find a way to have Sabonis take one of them off the floor. But I think McDermott has to be one of the 8 because of rest.
No, I don't. Not if you can play Sabonis at the 4 most some of the time.
I guess.
And then you can try to go small.
Three guard. Yeah.
Three guard a little bit. I mean,
that's true.
What will be interesting about this whole game is this whole series is that the Celtics and the Pacers both can play multiple different ways of lineup. They can go big, they can go small, they can go three guards, or I mean, I think even four guards in Celtics' case sometimes, wherever, however you place Hayward and Tatum. Like, they can do all this kind of weird stuff. And so, are the Pacers going to be just trying to match the Celtics constantly, or are they going to be dictating how the Celtics play? And that could be kind of the difference in the
right.
series.
Right. I agree. They kind of matched the last time they played, but I don't think they will in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I think Nate's going to have a stick to it rotation the first game and see how it goes.
I think so too. And I think McDermott too, is I wonder if they try to use him in a more unique way, the way Cavaliers used to use Kyle Korver, where yeah. you are just trying to get him the ball for the 10 minutes again on every time in a good spot and see if he'll hit a bunch of threes. So in the game instead, and you know, hoping that counteracts his not great defense, because you can just kind of use him as your focal point, constantly be feeding him and, you know, really getting the most out of that 10 minutes out of him.
Right.
Kind of thing. And I don't know if they will. They haven't really done that this year. And the question is, have they saved anything this season that they've kind of not shown for the playoffs?
Yeah, that's possible.
But I don't know. I mean, McMillan has never been the kind of guy who, like, just pulls things out in the playoffs, right? I don't think it's his MO.
Well, here's another thing. What have other teams say for them? You know, like, all of a sudden the Cavs were throwing the hardest traps we've ever seen at Vic, like, the second he crosses half court.
No, but it took them a game. They didn't have it till after game one.
That's true. That's true. But still, the Pacers had nothing for it.
But the question is, with the Pacers, what do you try to take out? I mean, if you're Brad Stevens, what are you saying? Okay, I mean, you're probably saying take out Bojan, essentially.
They did.
But to be honest, if you take out Bojan, which they did, they did that in the game they won by two.
They did that in the game they won by 20.
Yeah.
He was 1 for 8, and he only had 2 shots in the first half.
But part of that is the guard. I mean, I think that game they lost by 20. You got to look at Collison not playing as being the biggest issue.
They stunk. Their guards were terrible.
Well, no. In Collison, as much as we rag on him, he is kind of that little piece that just helps everybody else play better. He just kind of feeds Bojan in the right spots. He can get.
I've been told on Twitter that Darren Collison is terrible. How can
no, but he can. He's not. He's not as good as you think he could be. Like, you think he could be like the super efficient guard and whatever. And he is, but not to the extent.
I don't think he could be. He is.
No, but you know what I mean. Like I'm talking like an 18 point a game guy. It's just not.
Yeah,
him.
That's
he's not a 12-7 guy. That's what he is.
Not reasonable. Yeah.
No, it's not reasonable. And he has
a low efficiency. Or he's a low usage efficient guy too, which basically means he's a play finisher who doesn't turn the ball over. Which to me is a big deal. But it's your point guard who needs to do a little more than that.
Which is personally why I think he'd be the best off the bench point guard for like the next 3 years. And you could just have him out there, and like you could just get rid of Kojo and put him as your bench. I'm starting to feel that like. That'd be fantastic. But I think the thing about him too is Colin does a really good job in chaos of kind of
yes
understanding and throwing and not like getting but not letting the moment just overtake him. Like you can kind of see Bojan gets a little bit nervous in big moments. And Fatty sometimes can get kind of chaotic and a little bit out of control, where Collison feels like is always in control mostly in these big moments because he's been in a lot of big games at big times and understands that like it's the one who can kind of take a deep breath, can see the court for what it is, and then make a play that succeeds.
Well, another thing for me with DC is, you know what his biggest skill for the Pacers is?
No, what is it?
He's very good at playing with Oladipo.
Yeah.
His fit with Vic is big, and that's when he's good. And with no Vic, he's less effective. Like, that's just what it is. There's nothing you can do about that now.
Frankly, though, he's had a pretty good run. I mean, he's been playing pretty well.
I'm not saying he's been, like, bad this year. Just, you know,
no, I wonder what his post-Vic stats are on.
I'm typing that in my article ideas.
Because, I mean, I think he can be credited with helping Bogdan have the success he's had.
Yeah.
So, when did Vic get hurt? He got hurt Toronto on 23rd, right?
January 23rd.
So, since the 23rd, come on now, B-ball ref.
Oh, doofed by the B-ball.
Okay, I got it. So, he's averaging 14.5 points per game with 6.5 assists, 3.4 rebounds on 50, 46, 85 shooting.
Wow.
So, I mean, that's on 30 minutes a game.
It's pretty good.
So, I mean, that's – and he was so bad at the start of the year that you got – I was legitimately worried that he had kind of had his run. He just, yeah. You know, he was 30 – he's 31 now or something like that. Like, he was just – it was time. He had a good little run, and now it's over. But I don't know. That's – I mean, clearly he found something or whatever it was to get back to it, and he's having a nice – what is that? That's 31-game run since Vic got hurt. I mean, that's
– yeah.
We're looking at – and last year in the playoffs, he stunk, and that was part of the reason why we got kind of mad at him. And maybe, you know, he's going to be relied on to kind of, I guess, like the
last calming. Last year, Kojo played more minutes than him in the playoffs. Don't remember that.
Yeah, because Collison stunk until game seven.
Yeah. They had Kojo out there to just play defense, guard someone.
Well, I do wonder if Kojo's going to start pushing with Matthews. That I do wonder. Yeah. If Kojo's not the terrible shooter he was for the past 2 months, if his last game is an indication of how he's going to be the playoffs, I could see Kojo giving the two guard in the lineup.
I agree.
So.
Concurred. But I think all of these discussions we've had, to me, showing the value of a point guard on the floor, gives a chance for Evans not to play and keep it at an 8-man rotation, but I think it'll be 9. I really think it'll be 9.
I do think there's
go ahead.
I think there's a possibility if Holiday gets a moment and has a great kind of moment where he can end up playing in the rotation.
That's fair.
You know, you give him eight minutes in game one or two, and he has like, because he's been a much better passer of late, and he's been making kind of, he's just been, looks like a better player of it late.
He makes the first read every time, but he does it well.
Yeah, and I understand that, like, he hasn't quite developed completely, but he definitely is showing signs of where he's going as a player, and he could come in as a guy that maybe the Celtics didn't prepare for and kind of just provide 10 minutes of just like, oh, yeah, this guy's going to score. He's going to hit three. He's going to hit three threes, and he's going to have four assists, and he's going to, you know, whatever it is, kind of thing.
Yeah, that is pretty awesome.
But I want to go through it would one. Be
pretty awesome. Sorry,
I want to go through one exercise before we finish up the podcast.
Oh, okay.
All right. So, who has the better coach?
The Celtics.
Who has the best player?
The Celtics.
Who has the? I'm trying to think what else I'm going. Who has the best bench player?
The Pacers.
So you take Sabonis over Hayward.
Oh,
that's kind of that.
Yeah, I take Hayward there. But in terms of impact on the series, I think Sabonis could be bigger.
And then who has the home court? I mean, this is
dun dun dun.
So I mean, and that's where it's why your expectations in general for everybody should be limited because.
But Adam, who has Boomer?
Okay, no, but let's do it another way. Last year versus the Cavaliers, who had the better coach?
Is Tyler? I don't know.
Pacers probably
before the series. Pacers had the better coach.
They had the best
player. They had definitely the best bench player.
Yeah. So I mean, that's why last year they had more of a shot than I think they have this year because of that.
I want to find a series where that logic will not hold up.
I know. I was just, that's not really super logical, but it's just kind of an exercise to like kind of set your expectations correctly.
Yeah.
Because to win a series like this is going to involve,
like, say you get Thunder Nuggets.
Okay.
In the 2-7.
Okay.
I think Paul George is the best player.
Jokic is pretty damn good, dude.
Jokic is very damn good. But I think Paul George is better.
Okay, Paul George is better. I would say coaching. I don't know. I don't know enough.
Okay. This is not a good example. No, the best bench player is clearly the Nuggets. I take that back. You're right.
Okay.
This is a fun barometer. I like this game.
It's interesting. That's how I always think about series, about, okay, take those kind of three or four things and –
Let's just test this experiment with like hypothetical players until it breaks or doesn't break.
Well, no. So, I mean, like if you take Thunder Jazz last year, for example, probably the biggest upset the first round, I guess, unless you want to say.
That's at home court. Was that even an upset?
No, sorry. The upset was when the Pelicans beat the Blazers. Pelicans. But if you go through it, coach goes Blazers, player goes Pelicans, home best bench player. I don't know. I probably would go on either team, right? Both teams have carried benches, don't they?
Neither of those teams have more than five players.
Exactly. So you're looking at it where you've got even, you split coach and you split player, and then you have even the rest of the way, and then it's home court. But once the Pelicans got a game in Portland, that was at the window.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's how I look at it a little bit, I guess.
That's fair. I like it.
It's not like it.
That's a good anecdote.
Yeah. And then I
rarely like anecdotes, but that one's pretty good.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Then the last question I have is how do you think the Pacers win the series? Like, what has to happen either on Boston side or on the Pacers side?
Two things for the Pacers. Miles Turner is ponytail Miles.
I agree.
On offense, one. Two, Tyreke Evans is okay. They need anyone on the bench who can do stuff dribbling the ball. They just need it.
Okay, I think I have a third one.
Okay.
I think it's they win game one. And they make the Celtics panic.
Yes, I agree. And that locker room is so close to imploding at any second.
I think you mean, maybe what you even do is you somehow let Kyrie get 40, but everybody else get 5 and they lose by like 2 points, you know, something where like it turns everybody on somebody. And then you have, and then you have Kyrie kind of like saying, well, screw it. Then I'm
go up, win game one, get up to the podium and be like, man, the Celtics were good, but Tatum was fucking junk that game.
I mean,
that's how you win the series.
I think you would honestly, if you, I mean, this is pretty bad. You win both games in Boston. I am almost certain you're not going back to Boston if you win the first two in Boston, just because the way that team is set up.
For real.
But I think if you're able to get that first game, maybe not, one of the first two, probably the right way to put it. I think you get game two, too, you can get them kind of scrambling. But you got to get them kind of scrambling and kind of concerned and then see what happens. And maybe even part of it is, too, is you like you force Hayward to try to be the previous Hayward, like the old Jazz Hayward, pre-injury Hayward, and that kind of panics him, too. Like you got to kind of – play a little more of a mind game here, I think, too, because they're so like they're so mentally fragile. Where the Pacers, I don't feel they're mentally fragile, you know.
Yeah,
I used to think that at times, like the old PG and Monte Ellis team was like just ready to blow up at any minute. But you know, the Pacers right now feel like they're pretty tough together. And they'll kind of have a idea of where they want to go.
Yeah, so that's a good point.
I think that's a good way to end it. Anything else in this series before we wrap up?
It's gonna be fun to not play LeBron in the playoff for once.
I know. The problem is Giannis becoming the next LeBron.
I know. Yeah. Second round Giannis if you make it that far.
Yeah. So Tone and I will be doing podcasts after every Pacer game in the playoffs. We will be posting those either next day.
John will be on some of those after the home games, I think, too.
Yeah. We'll be a mix. Whatever there'll be a podcast after every
there will be game. People.
And I will not be on just once a week. I'll be doing as much as I can. But but yeah, since we are fortunate to have the Locked On Celtics guy, John Corrales at Reds Army John, who's really good. And is he going to be at the home games too?
Yeah, he'll be traveling.
So we have that resource to use, and he might be a Boston guy, but
be traveling because we're a self-funded operation.
But John works past live now, which is kind of a big thing. Yeah,
John is not. So
no,
yeah, that'll be great.
And honestly, when it comes to Boston, kind of like sports talk or fans, whatever, he's the most tolerable of them, I would say. He's not like one of those super cocky Boston fans or obnoxious. Like, he's very reasoned and from Boston fans, he's the best one. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. I have a week to practice my Boston accent. I look forward to that.
I really hope Celtics fans don't listen to this podcast because I generally just don't like listening to Boston that much. So
I'm going to do it again. I did it last week. I loved it. The Locked On Pacers podcast.
say where they can follow us.
Recorded in the Twitter. Library at Harvard.
say what's our Twitter handle?
At Locked On Paces. All one word.
And where can we follow you at?
I'm not gonna do it anymore. I'm at T NBA. You all know that.
I'm at Freedom Adam 5. We will have a show tomorrow. I guess we're recording this kind of earlier in the week, so we do not know the time of the game when it is yet, but it's soon as it's gonna be Saturday or Sunday, so we'll have a podcast after it. Look forward to that. Look forward to our playoff coverage. We appreciate you guys all year sticking with us, and this is the best time of year, so look forward to that. I'm excited. And then I know Tony's excited.
Let's go.
It's playoff time. That's all for Locked On Pacers podcast. We will see you guys tomorrow.